141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Stephen Davis says Rangers will be raring to go when the football resumes. Ross McCrory's thanking fans for well wishes after his positive coronavirus test. And one SPFL chairman offers up free hotel rooms to NHS staff during this crisis. I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me tonight is Jim Duffy and Mark Guidi.
Yeah, great to be in the studio, Gordon. We're keeping our 2 metres apart. We're following the rules. We're following the guidelines. We're here. But we are adhering to what the Prime Minister, who is in the background on the television addressing the nation, wants us to do. Still strange times, and hopefully we're all surviving, we'll all get through it in lockdown. And at some point over the next 5 or 6 weeks, maybe we'll just have a date when the football is resumed and society gets back to some kind of normality. But so far, thankfully, we're all safe and well.
Yeah, for some perspective, Jim, it does feel like every day that passes, football becomes less and less important. Yeah. But at the same time, it does form such a huge part of people's lives. And as I've mentioned many times, I'm becoming a bit of a broken record on it. You know, we're here just to try and give some sort of a football fix at a time when people will be missing it greatly.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought you had very cheap aftershave on when I come in here today. It's very medicinal in the Radio Clyde studios, which of course it is, because it's been wiped down continually. But yeah, I mean, I think that, listen, we all know how serious it is around the world and around my country. You know, there's no one trying to shy away from that. But you do need other subjects to talk about. You need to live your life. You keep saying mentally stimulated. You know, if you only focus on coronavirus and all the negativity that's there, then I think it just drags you down. So, you know, there's got to be a little bit of light sometimes, and sometimes just in the face of adversity, you just try and detach your mind for an hour or so. That's all we're asking you to do. We're not eliminating the problem by any stretch of the imagination, or even the hoping to get there, but just having something a little bit different to talk about.
Yeah, we're here until 8 o'clock and you can join in on the phones 01419511025 or on Twitter at ClydeSSB. Before we move on to something a bit different though, Jim, I was just wondering if you could provide a bit of an update with what's gone on at Dumbarton, because that's been one of the examples of a club that's had to make some pretty significant changes, take some pretty significant steps in the last few days.
Yeah, I mean, last week they had a board meeting. Obviously, the club had a board meeting, and you know, after the board meeting, you know, it was put to myself, could we look at reducing costs? Obviously, and obviously, the only real cost we've got, obviously, stadium aside and that stuff, is the players, because it's a part-time club. We don't have a huge administrative staff, but you know, I spoke to the players. The players pretty easily and unanimously agreed it would take a 50% cut. Spoke to the staff, similar. So we all agreed that you know, to try and keep the club afloat. That's the only sensible possibility that the club could on the road we could go down. And as I said, and it wasn't an easy decision from the board and the chairman, but. You know, as I said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you know, Scottish football, you know, you have to look at the reality of it. And the reality of is, you know, can we keep going as a football club until such times as where, you know, the football's up and running again? And we just don't know. I mean, everyone keeps throwing in these dates, and every couple of days, you look at the various sites and it'll say, oh no, we're thinking about playing this date and that date, and UEFA say this, but it's absolutely pie in the sky at this moment in time. So the only way we can try and keep the club afloat is by taking a deferred 50% wage cut, and that's what the players and staff have agreed to do.
But as we've also seen during times like these, is football means a great deal to a lot of people, and a lot of people want to come together and try and help. And I think the last time I checked, you had already raised over £10,000 from fan donations and different fundraising tactics to try and make a bit of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, again, I said before, I always feel for supporters, because they're lifelong supporters, the managers, players, you know, interchange all the time. But supporters, it means so much to them. Communities as well, you know, a club like Dumbarton within the Dumbarton community is so important, you know, for it. So yeah, I mean, you can't thank people enough. You know, they always go over and above what everyone else expects. And as I said, they don't have a tens of thousand fan base, but it doesn't matter whether you've got 50 fans or 50,000 fans. It is every bit as important to that group of people and to that community. And it shows again with, you know, the Dumbarton fans and You know, trying to raise money to, and every, genuinely, at this stage, every single penny counts.
Yeah, huge well done to everyone who's managed to make a little bit of a difference on that one. 01419511025 in the phones, at Clyde SSB on Twitter. Here's how you can really get involved tonight. And Mark Guidi, I must say, it's almost like I saved this up especially for you. This is right up your street tonight. As you'll know, we're starved of live football, so a lot of the inspiration for the ideas and the topics for the show is coming from what happened on this day in years gone by.
Right.
You look at what have we got the anniversary of, and then we can take it forward. We can all take a trip down memory lane and have a bit of a discussion. Well, on this day, 16 years ago, 2004, Celtic go to the Nou Camp.
Oh yes, I know. What you're
and draw 0-0 with Barcelona in a game widely remembered for the heroics of a then 19-year-old David Marshall.
I was there.
In goal. So with that in mind, it's not only Celtic fans that can get in touch and give us your memories. We want to know, what is the best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen? And that could be famous ones, you know, cup finals, it could be league deciders, or it might just be a random game in the middle of the season that none of us have ever would ever even remember. So what's the best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen? 01419511025. And to kick us off, who better to speak to than the man himself? David Marshall, Scotland and Wigan goalkeeper, joins us on the line. David, how are you? Thanks for taking the time.
Hi guys, you okay?
Not
hey,
too bad at all. I think first things first, David, 16 years ago, how on earth is that?
Listen to that intro there, it made me feel old. Yeah, it just passed so quickly, yeah, and I still remember it like it was yesterday. Obviously, it was such a big game and such a big event, you get reminded it every time you're out in Glasgow. So it's good to have that, I suppose, though, because a lot of players in their career probably won't have that one game to go back on that everybody remembers.
Yeah, take us actually back to just a little bit before it. I know we're talking about the day, but this madness all really kicks off in the first leg, of course, when you're thrust on at half time, when the Rab Douglas is sent off in the leg at Celtic Park. You're 19 years of age, not a lot of first team football behind you, and then you're told to get the gloves on. What on earth is that moment like?
I was just out warming up at half time and I seen the goalie coach run out, which is pretty normal for a goalie coach to be sent to go and get a lad to come on who's getting subbed. So even when he was running towards us, I didn't expect it to be me. Then he's called me over and I was like, must be someone up here. I still didn't think what I'm going on. I didn't realise. And then came up, getting up the tunnel, he's like, Big Rab's been sent off here, so you need to go on. So it was literally gear off, all the lads in the dressing room not saying much, just probably looking and thinking, oh no. But then it dawned that they had two guys sent off. So it was probably an easier night than obviously the second leg turned out to be, having a man advantage.
But David, so it's Matt Good. Two things. I was at Parkhead that night as well, then the return leg. One thing, what did Martin O'Neill say to you? And the second thing now, was it that night at Parkhead or was it a Nou Camp where you had the cheeky wee dink over one of the strikers who ran in to shut you down and pass? I don't know if it was Jackie McNamara or Didi Agat, whoever was on the right hand side. Was that when you came on as a sub that night? No?
Yeah, that's when I came on as a sub. Yeah, yeah. I got a pass back and tried to take, the boy was closing me down, so I took a kind of half a poor touch and it was stuck under my feet, and literally the only thing I could do was scoop it. But I think it clipped the boy's head and made it out to Didi. So yeah, it was a...
Inspired. That's what it was.
Yeah,
inspired touch.
It was nonchalant in the morning, but if it doesn't come off, it's stupidity. But it was mad.
In a weird way, David, is the first game then, is that a little bit easier to handle because, like you say, you've got no time to think about it. You've no time for pre match nerves or anything like that. You're really thrust in. Did that take a bit of that away? Did it in a weird way make it easier?
I never had really any of that, and even in the game, I think that was one of the only times I touched the ball was a couple of pass backs, because we had 10 men, they had 9, so actually the game itself was pretty comfortable. They've obviously got a few league games in between the build up to the next one, and just hoping you're going to play, because I think Magnus Hedman at that time was on loan in Italy, and there was talk about him coming back. He could have been recalled, but I don't know if the manager made the decision just to not do that, or it wasn't possible with a loan. So right up until a few days before the game, I was expecting Magnus to kind of walk in the building and obviously play the game.
David, it's Jim Duffy here. How you doing?
Hi, Jim. You all right?
I'm good. Good to hear from you again. I'm just, you know, again looking at the, you know, there's obviously a few. There'll be a few listeners out here that'll know a lot better than me. But there can't be many people, even over those 16 years, that one of it. I think it's two clean sheets. You know what I mean? If it, you know, but certainly one in New Camp. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
You know, to play against Barcelona in any game. I'm talking about league games, and because they're very, very rarely never score at home. I'm talking about in the New Camp. So
yeah.
You know, but to go to the New Camp. So I would guess you'd be lucky if you'd half a dozen over 16 years where they've never scored a goal in the New Camp. So I think you're in a very, very elite group of goalkeepers. I have to say that.
Was it also David? Was that the night in the New Camp? Did John Kennedy play certain half that night as well? He was just a kid too, wasn't he?
Yeah, Kendall played as well, and he then played Rangers when we came back a few days later, and then Kendall done his knee. The week later for Scotland. So John played that night as well.
But what about this anniversary, David? So the game in the New Camp, you now do have pre-match nerves to an extent because you've been building up to it. You know you're going to be up against Ronaldinho. You're taking on Barcelona in the New Camp. What do you remember of that game?
A bit of blur, really. You remember little things, the build-up, the training before, the evening before the game. I remember leaving the hotel and the rain was torrential. And as a goalie, you don't really want that when you're going to play Barcelona, I was thinking. And then it kind of died down when we got to the stadium. I don't really remember much of the warm-up, to be fair. I remember walking out, a few Barcelona lads coming out of the little church in the tunnel area. And then obviously it was straight away, made kind of the first save in the first minute or so, and it did help to settle any nerves. And we were under obviously a lot of pressure, so it was just one of those nights where Everton just hit me and obviously get through.
You're doing yourself a bit of a disservice saying that it hit you. It's quite the highlights reel when you look back on it. Is there one save that sticks out as being one you're particularly proud of, or is it the collective of, you know, keeping the clean sheet?
Oh, just the actual game was amazing. I think the first save and the kind of first minute settled definitely. There's nothing better as a goalkeeper than doing something well early doors, so that gave us that confidence. First half, they had a couple of chances but nothing major, and then they started to turn the screw a bit second. But probably one really good save first half and one really good save second half. The rest should have been saved, and as I say, the boys managed to grind it out like they usually did then.
Yeah, Roy Keane would say that's your job. He would never give you any credit for it. But it must be an incredible experience. I mean, what was the crowd? Was it 100,000?
That would have been, yeah. I think it was it would have been more or less so, I would imagine. Yeah, right up there. So it was an amazing stadium. Just the experience, just to go there, but to go and actually play and get that chance was usually never forget it. And
I think Frank Rijkaard's Barca team at that time, was it?
I think Philip Koku was one of the midfielders,
yes.
And actually played, like, he's managing Derby now, so that's how old I felt earlier in the season.
So, yes.
I was used to play against him, and he's the manager of Derby now.
Did they remember you?
He probably doesn't know who I am, no.
Just to bring us up to the present day, or in, to be more specific, tomorrow, David, you were probably going to be starting in goal for Scotland against Israel. And now you will be at home, stuck inside, like everyone else. What's it been like?
Just the same as everybody else. You're really, it's just such a difficult situation. Obviously being bored, I think everybody, all football fans and players, it's just something that they couldn't foresee. It's took away everything for us. So, but the reality is it's the loss of life, and especially when you look at the figures in Italy and Spain recently, it's just a shock to everyone, so you have to take it seriously, and everybody can do what they can. Obviously football is a massive thing in this country and everybody's missed it so much, but we just have to take it in the chin. It's obviously disappointing, the timing of it with the playoff games coming up.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't want anyone to think I've lost perspective here. I know, you know, that far more important things. But if we can just talk football for a couple of minutes, David, that must be, you know, another frustration. The fact that this is such a big game, it's as close as we've come in years. I'm sure you guys were all building up to it and looking forward to it, and now it's just sort of hanging there. We're not really sure when that's going to take place.
Yeah, because obviously we've had the big break for November, so it's kind of back of your mind, and then with 4 or 5 weeks lead in, we're getting sent some footage of Israel and stuff and looking at their bits and pieces. So it was becoming a bit more realistic, as if you were getting really close to it. So the excitement was building, and then obviously to have it taken away is disappointing. I know we had a few injuries, where obviously John McGinn was just getting back, and a few other injuries as well. So maybe by the time the game does happen, hopefully everybody's fit and well, and maybe be a positive for us when the game eventually does happen.
Yeah, now I know you goalies can go on for quite some time. I think you're 35 at the moment, so I'm by no means retiring you yet. But when, and notice I said when, not if, when we make it to the Euros, you're going to have to hang on to the end of next season now. Is that alright with you, up to that challenge?
I hope so, as long as the gaffer's alright with it. I did think about that when it got postponed. If it was postponed to next year, it was obviously at a certain age, you don't know what you're going to be in the next year or so, and that probably, we've got a pretty young squad, so it probably affects me more than most. But as I say, if I can keep the club form going, hopefully I can stay in the team.
And have you been doing the old fitness regimes? I noticed all the players are either on social media or they're out doing whatever it is they're being asked of their teams. That same for the goalies, I take it?
Yeah, it's difficult to replicate the goalkeeping stuff, especially with the new rules now that's come over the last couple of days. The kids are off school as well, so you're trying to homeschool / not fight them every single minute of the day. So yeah, we'll be back at football for at least a few weeks training wise. So it's not been too important, but you just kind of top up, and then when you get a set date, I suppose you can put the foot down and get yourself ready again.
Right, I'll let you get back to letting the kids lob toilet rolls at you on the living room couch. But thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, David. That was David Marshall, Scotland and Wigan goalkeeper. The reason he joins us, because on this day, it is the anniversary of that game in Barcelona. Barcelona 0, Celtic 0, pitched in, 19 years of age, keeps a clean sheet. And what that means for you tonight on the phones and on Twitter is we're asking, what is the best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen? David's gone now and he's away back to the kit. You don't have to say that one. That was just the starter to kick us off, give us the inspiration. So what is the best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen? Are we even more impressed if you can tell us ones that we were never aware of? Maybe just a random mid-season game that you were at. Tell us the best goalkeeping performance you can remember. 01419511025.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Road Accident Solicitors. The compensation you deserve when you've been sidelined. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Jim Duffy and Mark Guidi here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We're asking for the best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen. The reason we ask, it's the anniversary of 19-year-old David Marshall's clean sheet in the new camp with Celtic 16 years ago today. So we're looking for fans of all clubs to get involved with the best goalkeeping performance you can remember. Loads of tweets coming in already. Paul Wilkie says, I remember that game like it was yesterday. I had won a competition to go to the new camp, took my son Kevin, sat on the plane over next to the late great Tommy Burns, who was brilliant with my son. David Marshall and John Kennedy were unbelievable. What a story that is. Yeah, you won't forget that in a hurry. Let's go straight to the lines and see what you've got for us then. Ved is in Jordan Hill. Best goalkeeping performance you've seen?
Hi, the best one is Fraser Foster in the League Cup final. Just in December last year.
Yes, we're not having to go too far back.
You know, I have seen when Fraser Foster played against Barcelona. That was great as well. But this one is far better.
Yeah,
everything was thrown at him.
Yeah, I mean, I can see you two nodding in the studio. That was just unbelievable. We're not having to go too far back, yeah. So everyone remembers it.
Yeah, me and Matt were just speaking about that, in the break there, and because it is recent, and it was one of those games where, you know, just about everything, Rangers threw everything at Celtic, and it really was, you know, an outstanding performance, from Fraser Foster. He just seemed to get his angles right. He seemed to have his concentration absolutely spot on. And although they weren't all unbelievable saves, spectacular. Mm-hmm. They were just so important, and he just looked as if it was one of those days where psychologically it was affecting some of the Rangers players. They're thinking, and they obviously the penalty as well. Yeah. So he just thought, we're just not going to beat this guy today. And I think that also gives almost extra energy to the Celtic defence that day, mm-hmm. because it was a real defensive performance. Right. So no, exactly. I think psychologically, technically, it was an outstanding performance from Fraser Foster that day.
Yes, absolutely. He is an exceptional goalkeeper, and I obviously, with what's happening right now in the world, when the football starts again, I hope maybe Celtic can keep them, you know, and see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm sure they do, Mark. And for all the madness that's going on at the moment, that's the one thing that is starting to annoy me a little bit. See, when I see these transfer rumours at the moment, I think, what? How? What? Like, we don't even know when the so-and-so has been linked. Yeah. I'm not saying that clubs aren't still working away in the background, but that goes without saying. If you're looking for one game which sums up why Celtic would want to keep him, that would be it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that even Fraser Foster would like to stay at Celtic. There's no doubt that Neil Lennon would want him. You know, Neil Lennon pushed very hard to get him in the door away back August. Obviously, the wages would be a stumbling block, but I think if there's, you know, Celtic and Southampton, I think I've got a good working relationship. You look at the amount of transfers between both clubs coming in and going out. So I think there's certainly a basis, a foundation there to go and work something from. And, you know, you don't want to see clubs putting themselves in financial peril, particularly in everything that's going on now. But I would say if you're Celtic, whether that be Neil Lennon or the Celtic board, and you think, If there's one guy maybe just worth pushing the boat out for, if you need to go that extra, whatever it is, 20%, whatever, to get him, I think Fraser Foster, because he's not a gamble. You know exactly what you're getting. He loves it here. He knows the game. For Neil Lennon, you must look at him and think, he's worth 15 points a season.
Yeah, but also just speaking to you, David Marshall there, at 35 years of age, I'll come up with the six, he's a goalkeeper for the next 10-12 years. Yeah. You know, if, you know, so it's not like if you say, oh, we'll get him and we'll pay a lot of money, either transfer fee or salary and that, and it'll go 2 or 3 years at him. You could really, in effect, have him for 10 years still.
You or know? He's still young enough and still there. You might get him for 2 million quid. Okay, you might need to pay him, I don't know, 35 or 40 grand a week or whatever, but he might become a 7, 8, 9, 10 million pound goalkeeper again 2 years from now, you know?
Especially even at 30, that'd be for a goalkeeper.
All day long. Just on Ved's point, and since we're on the topic of, you know, best goalkeeping performances you've seen, what goes into that then, Jim? Does it have to be something you referenced there? Does it have to be a combination? You're probably looking at one or two outstanding saves, as in how did he make that?
Yeah.
Chances of you doing 4, 5, 6 of them, probably not. So you're looking for a couple of real eye-catching ones, but then is there a... is it a volume question as well? You know, things just start hitting you, and even the ones that you're expected to make almost become better because you've made so many before.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's different ways to look at it. It can be pure concentration. So you might not have had a lot to do, but then in the last minute or the last couple of minutes, you might have been winning the game 1-0, or it's tight now, whatever it happens to be, and then you make an unbelievable save, but you've had nothing to do the whole game. And there's many occasions, I mean, I remember Alan McGregor recently for Rangers making a cup of him last year in the Europa League, and remember Fraser Foster this year, I can't remember what game
Lazio.
It was. So Lazio, an unbelievable save late on. You know, so it might just be that one pivotal save, and that can stick in your mind. But in terms of these games, these is a combination of saves. And as I said, for me, it's about concentration, positional play. And that's your daily work with your goalkeeping coach. Day in, day out, you do these type of things. That is practice. And that's what makes these goalkeepers so important, because the practice and the work they put in. And you can see them now, goalkeepers. Used to be a goalkeeper make a save and everybody could just went, yeah, right. Now they're up, they're clenched fists, they're jumping up, the players on top of them. It is such a big thing for goalkeepers now, and they're getting every bit as much a pride in making these saves and clean sheets as strikers are for scoring goals.
Ved, thank you very much. The best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen. Sandra in Ballinlock.
Hi there.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi, panel.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi there. Mine's with Ali Maxwell against Dundee United, and was it the David Cooper final?
Not the David Cooper. Well, I mean, he played and he set up the goal. But yeah, 1990. Now we're talking. Sandra's picked a good one. Folk are going to think I put you up to this, Sandra.
91.
And Sandra, I'm interested as well because you're a Celtic fan, is that right?
I'm a Celtic fan. Yes, there is also another goalkeeper that broke my heart umpteen times.
I know it's coming here. No, but I like that. The reason I ask, I don't mind what team you support, but the reason I ask is Sandra's a Celtic fan, yet it's a Motherwell goalie against Dundee United that's the best goalkeeping performance she's seen, which speaks volumes for just how good it must have been.
Yeah, and ended up in hospital after, didn't he? With his ribcage and a punctured lung or something like that happened to him.
Yeah, ruptured spleen.
Ruptured spleen.
Double vision.
A lot. I mean, I remember that game as well, and he did have some fantastic saves. It was the McLean brothers' final, Tommy against Jim. And the jinx for Dundee United went on until they won the Cup in 94 under Ivan Golak. But yeah, a memorable final for so many reasons, Sandra, and you're right. Maxwell was outstanding that day, and then to go on to your next one, Andy Gorham, yeah, I mean, just game after game after game after game. You know, it's, you know, broke Tommy Burns' heart, didn't he?
And the thing about that, Jim, we're now talking about different types of performances, like we said just before Sandra, come on. And this one, surely you have to take those injuries into account. So it's a good performance anyway, but I think it was most of the second half plus extra time, broken ribs, ruptured spleen, double vision. And I'm pretty sure there's a sort of acrobatic tip over the bar at one point where he gets, and he's in absolute bits.
I remember
that. That's outrageous.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Sandra's picked a goalkeeping performance which, not just in terms of the technical ability, but bravery. And you have to be brave to be a goalkeeper. You know, you're diving at players' feet. And again, in 1991, there wasn't quite as much concern about, but you know the concussion aspects and all these other aspects that sometimes it's like
no sub goalies even back that drive, no sub goalies.
You know, they maybe ran on and you know, you see, look, I hurt my ribs here. Physio's probably thinking, oh, listen, we'll get a bit of cold sponge on it. We'll get a wee rib. You'll be fine. Wish, can you get up? Can you breathe? Yeah, go on with it. And the players are going to want to have to do it as well. So that bravery and that kind of desire. Now, the adrenaline's pumping, so he's probably get through the game by that alone. And then when you win, it makes everything that a little bit special. But I bet you at night time,
well, as Mark says, it was straight to hospital. It was straight to hospital after the game. So Sandra, not being a Motherwell or a Dundee United fan, did you just watch that on TV then, and it's just stuck with you for all these years?
Yep. Me and my dad, we sat and watched it, and I felt as though it was on the full day. And it was just brilliant. I've always remembered it.
Brilliant, I love that. That was Sandra and Blomark, a Celtic fan. But it's a Motherwell Dundee. But I was only two, so looking back, it kind of does. There we go. That was Sandra picking out Ali Maxwell, 91 Scottish Cup final, as the best goalkeeping performance she's seen. Cooper 30 is on Twitter. As a Rangers fan, I've seen Woods, Gorham, Kloss, McGregor all have wonderful nights, but on the highest level, it's got to be the 1982 European Cup final. Aston Villa, Bayern Munich.
Nigel Spink.
Nigel Spink brought the second keeper Jimmy on. He says, and the rest is history. What a performance from Nigel Spink. Stephen McNish says, maybe not the best performance, but Craig Gordon's save for Sunderland v Bolton always sticks out in my mind. Yes, a one-off save. That
I think it was voted the best save.
Yeah, the Premier League or something like that. Yeah,
the Premier League.
We'll try it. We're going to try for the all-round performances, though, not these one saves. We're looking for the guys that did it over the 90 minutes. Let's see what Frank in Garrahill has for us. Hi, Frank.
Good evening.
How are you?
Hi, Frank.
The game I remember most was George Hunter playing for Celtic against the Hearts at Tynecastle in 1951, the Scottish Cup. Hearts were all over Celtic for most of the game. It was one each, and it was unrelenting, the pressure from Hearts. And George Hunter saved everything, absolutely everything. And the place was packed. Spectators were sitting on the track. I think the attendance was 51,000. At the end of the game, Celtic supporters rushed on and picked up George Hunter and carried him off shoulder high into the pavilion. It was an amazing game. Celtic won 2-1.
I love that, Frank, because in the space of 10 minutes, we've gone from the League Cup final in 2019 back to, what was it, 1951.
Yes, 51.
Well, Frank, it won't surprise you. Jim Duffy doesn't remember it. Mark Guidi doesn't. Hugh Keevans probably will. I don't either. So we're relying on you here. Were you there? What was it like to witness that then?
I was there, yes. I was during my national service, and I was stationed in Carlisle at the time, and I managed to get a ticket, and I went up to Edinburgh from Carlisle.
Brilliant. And did George Hunter have a, you know, did they go on to continue these types of performances?
No. Sadly, he took tuberculosis. Celtic sent him to Switzerland for a while. He was there for a few months. He came back, and he played, but in those days, you could rumble up the goalkeepers, but they were all warned to give him some soft treatment, and he did. But sadly, he died a young man. He was transferred down to Derby County, but he died a young man. He was from Troon.
So that was soon after that performance, was it? That's what I meant. I was wondering if, but there we go.
I think he was only about 18 months at Celtic. He was in the Cup final team of 1951. When Celtic beat Motherwell a few months previously, in the same year, that was about the third round when they played Hearts at Tynecastle, And of course, he got a cup winner's cup medal.
I'll tell you what, Frank, in all the years you've been supporting your team and you've gone back to 1951, I tell you what, there must have been some performance. If you can remember that performance all those years ago, you know, 69 years ago. So unbelievable. So it must have been a performance and a half that. And you're right, in those days, they could knock the goalkeeper in, you know, they could clatter into the goalkeeper.
You could shoulder charge the goalkeeper over the line.
Yeah, that's right, he was holding the ball, that's right. So
the second best was John Bonner against Hibs in the Coronation Final.
There we go. Well done,
Frank.
Thanks very much.
Thank
for
you so much for
thanks,
that, Frank. Really right. appreciate that. It's always good if you can learn something. Learn something new. 1951. Clearly, I knew nothing about it. And Frank has recalled that like it was yesterday, hasn't he?
Yeah, brilliant.
That's what I'm saying. Must have been some performance that.
The celebration as well. Ronnie, let me clean my glasses. Ronnie's a Stenhouse Muir fan. What have you got for us, Ronnie?
Hi. Going back to 1972. Or 73, I can't remember exactly the year, but Stenhouse Muir were drawn against Rangers in the League Cup. That was in the days when it was home and away. And in the home game at Stenhouse Muir, we actually got beat, I think it was 5-1. But despite getting beaten 5-1, the goalkeeping performance that day was astonishing. It was from Stuart Kennedy, who played for Stenhouse Muir at the time in goals. And it would have been double 5-1 if we hadn't had Stuart in goals that day. Actually, went to Ibrox for the return leg, and Stenhouse Muir went and beat Rangers 2-1 at Ibrox in the return leg. Unfortunately, I didn't go, but the guys that told me that did go told me he was just as great that day as he had been at Ochilvie. So Stuart went on to better things, but just to prove my point, Rangers, after these two games, actually signed him. So, the goalkeeping performance was amazing.
I think that's been the case, Ronnie, in a few occasions with, you know, smaller clubs where the goalkeepers have had these wonder games. Yeah. And I know even in recent years, you know, I've had people say, how do we know sign that goalie? How did they know sign that goalkeeper? Because they have those games against this big team. But Stuart Kennedy was a different example. He went on to have a very illustrious career. So, you know, from that point of view. But, there are goalkeepers who have their day. In fact, I think it was, I don't remember years now, 5-6 years ago now, when Nico Carew for Morton. When Morton beat Celtic 1-0
yes,
in the cup,
I remember that. Yeah,
I think Celtic had something like 28 shots on target, and then Dougie Emery scored with a penalty to win 1-0 at Celtic Park in extra time. And Nico Carew had one of those unbelievable games where just everything. Because if you've got that many shots on target, you know that your goalkeeper's earning his pound. That's for sure.
Do you think that still annoys Virgil van Dijk that night, or do you think he's over it? I think he's moved on.
I think you'll just have to ask Big Virgil next time you're with him. I think he'll be not too bad.
01419511025. Thank you to Ronnie and Stenhouse Muir. Keep them coming, and we could be speaking to you next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the league leader for compensation. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Jim Duffy and Mark Guidi here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Very busy phone lines. We are asking you for the best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen. The reason we ask is because it's the anniversary of 19-year-old David Marshall keeping a clean sheet in the new camp. He should have been playing for Scotland against Israel tomorrow, but no football, obviously, at the moment. It was nice of David to take time out of homeschooling the kids and to all the madness that goes along with that, trying to keep up with them, to join us on the phone. So we're asking you for your memories. So many coming in. Scott Mitchell says Ronald Vatrus' debut against Celtic. Barry Spence, John Gordon and Logie have all gone for the same one. Andy Gorham, Leeds United, Elland Road. Remember it?
Yeah, Alan McCoy scored, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Logie's said, you know, any time he played Celtic, but up there, the performance at Elland Road, Barry Spence as well, yeah, like I say, so a lot of people are picking that one.
I think you could probably have half a dozen Andy Gorham games. Particularly against Celtic, as Mark said earlier on, he had a couple of unbelievable games where he was saves that you just, you'd only dream of. And again, I get back to that day in, day out, you know, training, you know, the routines they go through with the coaches and the work they do. And also, as I said before, you know, you have to have the mentality, as there's a number of things in Andy. You know, Andy was like that. He just switched on, particularly his games, like Leeds, like Celtic. Andy had that. That was a game he absolutely loved. He knew he was every bit as good as anybody in the country at that time, you know, in these type of games.
He also, you remember, Gordon, there's two goalies I'm going to mention. They're both in the same era. They're both, it was Jim Leighton and Andy Gorham. And again, what even impressed me about Andy Gorham was his spell at Motherwell. He was outstanding when he went to Firth Park for that era, you know, whatever it was, 6 months. He was brilliant. And then, I don't know, you might have managed him, John, if you inherited it or whatever, but I remember when Jim Leighton had to resurrect his career post-Man United and had a great couple of seasons at Hibs.
Aye.
And he went there and he was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. And Jim was at Hibs and I was there for Hibs, a while, you know? And then he went back to Aberdeen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, listen, we were lucky, you know, Scottish goalkeepers get a bit of stick, particularly from down south, you know, you always get a bit ridiculed. But certainly, you know, somebody like Andy and I said was phenomenal as a Scottish goalkeeper. You know, listen, we've had a lot of goalkeepers and, you know, from different countries. But as a Scottish goalkeeper in the last 20, 30 years, I think Andy takes a bit of beating.
You've not seen these tweets and yet you've just managed to link the next two tweets perfectly. Chris McNulty says, what about Jim Leighton against Sweden at Ibrox? I think we won 1-0, John McGinley.
Absolutely, yeah.
Says Chris McNulty. And on to a Motherwell point, Alan Cleland says, here's a name you've not heard in a while, I guarantee it. Francois Dubordeaux for Motherwell against Rangers at Firth Park. McFadden scored the only goal against a raging Kloss on Boxing Day 2002. A storming performance.
Francois Dubordeaux.
Francois Dubordeaux. I signed him for Dundee for a little while, so there you go. And actually kept in contact with him for quite a number of years because he went to America. I don't know, 20 years ago, I don't know, you lose track of time now, you say, but aye, so he's still on my phone, and every now and again, you know, you get a little bit from it, but yeah, Francois Dubordeaux was another one. I don't know that game, but...
I do, the reason I was the ball boy, one of the ball boys behind the goal, I did that season at Firth Park, and then at the end of that season... young fan, probably some adults did it as well, but I feel like it was acceptable when you were young. They'd all wait, you know, at the end of the season and try and get a strip or whatever off the players. And Francois Dubordeaux came out in front of the main stand, and me and my mate took one boot each, one of his Copa Mundials each, stinking damp Copa Mundial. And no disrespect to Francois, but he's not exactly Peter Schmeichel, is it? You're not going to take it home and put it on the mantelpiece. So I think it stayed in my cupboard for a couple of years and.
I slung it.
Yeah, that was nice.
Pretty much. Like so that. There we go. Alan Cleland sending that. And what about Craig and Clyde Bank? What have you got for us, Craig?
Hi, guys. Good evening. Hi, one game that always stands out to me, and I remember it, was Edwin van der Sar, Scotland versus Holland, Euro 96.
Right.
No matter what we did, we couldn't get the ball past him, and that save against him. Was it Ali McCoist in the last.
It'd have been Villa. 10, was that Villa Park, Craig?
Oh, I think so, aye.
I was at that game. I'm sure it was there, Villa Park. And then Scotland played.
Aye.
Now, who did Scotland play in the last game they won, but it wasn't enough? Was it Switzerland?
Switzerland
1-0.
Yeah.
Obviously, Van der Sar going to Man U and was, you know.
Juventus, he played.
Yeah, outstanding goalkeeper. And again, big chore. And again, one of those goalkeepers early on who was good with his feet, you know, I mean, he could clip balls out and you know, United used to play that counter attack game very well after similar to Schmeichel, who used to throw the ball over
his distribution was brilliant, wasn't it, Van der Sar?
I think when you look back and see certain goalkeepers, Craig's mentioned Van der Sar against Scotland, you know, I mean, obviously there'll be certain games depending, you know, how your memory is, but likes a Schmeichel, you know, I mean, there's been a few games where he invented that kind of star shape, didn't he, you know,
just make himself big, as they say,
and a lot of the saves aren't wonder saves, but they're saves that are just so vital, and you can make three or four of them in a game, Gordon, and that can be the difference between you know, winning and losing the match.
Craig, were you there at Villa Park or just watching
it on
TV?
I remember watching it on the telly, and I just remember seeing him sailing through the air literally to get the ball from the top corner. I think to myself, what a save.
Yeah, I think we must have thrown everything at it that day. I've just brought up the team just to try and jog the memory. So Kevin Gallagher and Scott Booth sort of led the line. Gordon Dewry, sorry, as well. A couple of them come off. John Spencer, Billy McKinley came on. Craig Burley came on. No one could find a way through. So Netherlands 0, Scotland 0. You were there, did you say, Martin?
Yeah,
Villa Park?
It was. And then I was at the Switzerland. I was at the three games that day. The first one, obviously, is remembered for obvious reasons. The Gary McAllister penalty missed the Gaza. Yeah, the Gaza celebration. Andy Gorham was a goalkeeper that day for Scotland as well. So yeah, it was kind of heartbreaking. That was the one where we were so close.
I thought you were going to mention your Yuri Geller story there.
Typical Scotland.
Listen, I'm happy to tell you my Yuri Geller story if you want. I don't know if the listeners are fed up hearing it, but there is a link to Radio Clyde, yes. For it. So what would it be? John Barnes was manager of Celtic. So we're going back to maybe August, September 1999. Celtic are playing out in Israel. I can't remember. Well, in Tel Aviv anyway. And
Gabby.
No. I can't remember, Jim, who it was. But we're in Israel and we're in the hotel. And the press pack, the media pack, we bump into Yuri Geller. He hears us speaking English. What are you doing? Oh, we're over for the game. Da da da. He says, come on through to the hotel restaurant and I'll show you something. So Paul Cooney is there for Radio Clyde. And I always remember, can we get this live? And I'm thinking, but it's radio. We can't see the trick. But it was just so we're caught up. So I'm standing with Paul.
It's not a trick.
And there's a few of us there. Kenny McDonald is there. For the News of the World, so we're there. So it was a good squad of us. Anyway, Yuri Geller picks up a spoon and he's talking to us and he's saying, so you're here for the game and how do you think it will go? And oh, who's this manager of Celtic now? And while he's talking, the spoon is bending over in front of us. So see, that must be a spoon that he carries around that can do that. So then he said to one of the wait staff, go and pick me a spoon at random from the cutlery drawer. And she did, and she came back with another spoon. And the same again. So he's standing, da da da. Oh, right, Celtic, yep, Tel Aviv, you've been here before. And as he's blethering, the spoon is just doubling over in front of him. Honestly, I never believed in all those things.
So Euro 96 is his fault now, as far as you're
concerned. Well, so he claims he said fantastic publicity out of it. But it was just and I think then it was France 98, 2 years later. And as you know, Jim, that's back in the period when we were taking qualification for granted. You know.
Let's go back. Let's take one more call before the news. Gary is in East Kilbride. What's the most memorable, the best goalkeeping performance you can remember, Gary?
Hi guys, how you doing?
Good.
This goes back in time. My dad, God rest his soul, he took us to the game. We were at Ibrox in 1981. It was Halloween 1981, and we were up against Partick Thistle. I remember walking into the game, my dad's like, he says, you know what, son, these guys haven't beat us at Ibrox for 24 years. This is a doddle today. So we sat there, and Thistle had already beat Rangers earlier in the season at Firhill. So we're sitting there, and it started, you know, and Alan Ruff was in goals for Partick Thistle. So we're sitting on the Copeland Road, and a couple of early saves, no bad. Then Thistle score. And I remember my dad turned around and he says, just put your feet up, son. We're never scoring past him today. It ain't going to happen. And my goodness, was he right? I've never seen anything like it. It was like the Alamo, and he was David Crockett. You know, Alan Ruff was David Crockett. It was incredible. And Thistle get one breakaway in the second half, and a wee guy with ginger hair scored. You might know his name now. Everybody knows him. It was Morris Johnson. Oh, nobody's right. Heard him. Nah. And he scored the second goal. The name.
Somebody told me he was running the country just now, you know.
He scored another. Ah, but it was nothing short of incredible.
That guy's only slightly less controversial, yeah. I think you'll find. Gary, sorry, did you? Yeah. So you said you get taken along. Were you young at the time? You went along with your dad?
I'd have been 16 then. I would have been 16 back then.
And it's well,
there was 17,000 inside Ibrox. Now, that was supposed to be the bad times, but I've looked back at that year and Rangers won the League Cup final against Dundee United and then get beaten in the Scottish Cup final with Aberdeen. So they weren't that bad, but they were just rotting in the league.
There we go. Well, it must have left quite an impression, I must admit. Gary and East Kilbride, thank you very much. That was a great memory. On that one, there's always a wee personal touch as well. You go along with a family member that means something to you, a game that sticks in your mind. There's always one. I cannot believe that we have started. I mean, in no disrespect to him, but this has been about Gorham and about Leighton and about Van der Sar, and we've actually got a proper discussion about Francois Dubourdeau on the go. Neil has sent me a message here and he says, just heard you talk about Francois. I actually got friendly with him towards the end of his career. He was at Forfar. He introduced me to him. He was interested in stocks and shares and wanted to help try and get a career. I can't remember how I helped him, but he treated me to a bite to eat and a few beers in Big Owens and Coatbridge as a thank you. Was a really good guy. Hated football because the majority of players were immature. Probably hard to disagree, he says. That was Neil on Twitter. 01419511025. That's the number you need to get in touch on the show, and particularly right now for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Gordon Dale lost last night. The signed ball left the building, and he was, in true DL fashion, blaming it on the current climate, but you know, the madness. He wasn't taking any responsibility for it. He says these results don't count at the moment. Very controversial statement. But your chance to beat the pundit is here. 01419511025, and you have to call before 7 o'clock.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the form team for compensation for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompsons.com.
Jim Duffy is here, Mark Guidi is alongside him, and we are here as always trying our best to give you a bit of a football fix in these abnormal times. I know it's all a bit mad, and I know everyone's routine is thrown off, and there's a lot of uncertainty, so we're just going to try and stay here and bring you a bit of normality during these abnormal times. So if you're looking for a football fix, we're here at 6 o'clock every night, and you can get involved on the phones or on Twitter. We kicked off tonight hearing from Scotland goalkeeper David Marshall. He should have been lining up for Scotland against Israel in that playoff tomorrow. He obviously won't be. And we looked back on the anniversary of one of his most famous days, or nights I should say, in the Nou Camp, keeping a clean sheet. So we've been looking for the best goalkeeping performance you've ever seen. I must admit, I had sort of thought we would leave that behind, but the phone lines are so busy and Twitter is so busy. We'll keep that going to an extent, but we're going to take a look at some of the other stories in Scottish football as well after we do this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Beat the Pundit time. I've changed my advertising slogan for Beat the Pundit. It's now the sign ball that you can kick around the house during your self-isolation. Let's see if we can send one to Cumbernauld. Andy is there on the line. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how you doing?
Not bad, Andy. How are you?
Hi, fine, thanks.
Good man. I'm going to toss this coin, Andy, and if it's heads, you're going to take on Mark Guidi, but if it's tails, it will be Jim Duffy. And it is tails. Jim Duffy against Andy from Cumbernauld. So,
do you ever go? Honestly.
Is it always you? Do you know why that is? And I need to word this very carefully. There's obviously something wrong with my tossing technique because
you do have to word that carefully.
It is always tails. It's always Gordon DL. He sits there and he moans about it. But there's the coin. It's a legitimate coin.
Spy it a few bits. You know what I mean?
Try again. Just
for... No. Just it's fine.
It was heads that time. Sorry, Jim Duffy. Jim against it. Andy. So I'm going to give you some Clyde 2 to listen to. Andy, I'll put 30 seconds on this clock. You're going up against Jim, and the only secret is that you can pass. Okay?
Okay.
Good man. Your time starts once I get the questions ready, and your time starts now. Which Scottish Premiership mascot did artist David Shrigley create in 2015?
Partick Thistles.
Which women's team does Scotland midfielder Joe Love play for?
Celtic.
What was the famous score in the Scottish Cup winner Broth beat Bon Accord in 1885?
21-0.
Where did Lewis Morgan start his professional career?
St Mirren.
Who did Rangers sell Nikita Jelovic to?
Everton.
Name any of Celtic's players who have been shown a straight red card this season.
Ryan Christie.
Okay, let's bring Jim Duffy back. Jim, can you hear us?
I was enjoying the jam there.
Sorry, you're stuck with
just my error.
With me and Andy at the moment, are you ready?
Yeah.
Right, same set of questions to you, and your time starts now. Which Scottish Premiership mascot did artist David Shrigley create in 2015?
Partick Thistles.
Which women's team does Scotland midfielder Joe Love play for?
Glasgow City.
What was the famous score in the Scottish Cup winner Broth beat Bon Accord in 1885?
36-0.
Where did Lewis Morgan start his professional career?
St Mirren, I'm not sure if it was.
Who did Rangers sell Nikita Jelovic to?
Newcastle.
Name any of Celtic's players who have been shown a straight red card this season. What Canadian football club did Jimmy Nicol play for in the 1980s?
Toronto.
Okay, what do you think?
It was Vancouver Whitecaps.
What do you think, Andy?
I think
he's beat you.
I should have got the Bon Accord one. I knew I thought more had got it.
Ah no, but that's what happens when the pressure's on, Andy, and that clock's ticking in your ear. Premiership mascot that artist David Shrigley created in 2015 was Kingsley, the Partick Thistle mascot. You both got it. The sort of madness of that.
Was that 2015?
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
That was the thing I was doing.
What jumped out at me there, because I remember going along on the day when this, you know, You know when these press releases come in, we're releasing a new mascot, and you think, all right, okay. Mm. Not, but then,
when you, scary Kingsley.
When we went along, and then he emerged from the tunnel, and it was worldwide, wasn't it? You remember all across. Brilliant when you look at it. So there we go, Kingsley. Which women's team does Scotland midfielder Joe Love play for? It is Glasgow City. Mm. So Jim goes one in front, and the famous score. Arbroath Bonacord is 36-0. I think you would have got it with more time, Andy, but you jumped in. Jim goes 3-1 in front. Lewis Morgan started his professional career at St Mirren. You both got it, 4-2.
I wasn't sure he was a kid at Rangers.
Well, he was, but I meant, you know, first team. So, 4-2. Mm-hmm. Who did Rangers sell Nikica Jelovic to? It was Everton. Jim got it wrong. Andy got it right. Is there a comeback on? 4-3. Name any of Celtic's players who have been shown a straight red this season. Ryan Christie. Frimpong. League Cup final, that was a straight red, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You both went for Ryan Christie anyway at Livingston, so Jim stays one in front. Andy, and you ran out of questions. The Canadian football club Jimmy Nicol played for in the 80s. I was hoping for the full title.
Toronto Blizzards.
Blizzards. There we go. Well, seeing producer.
So I was again for Toronto, is that what you're saying?
It doesn't matter. You won anyway. Producer Andy, being from Toronto, there was obviously a bit of favouritism in the question. Andy, he has pipped you, so no signed ball tonight, I'm afraid. But thanks so much for taking part.
Cheers, Andy.
Well done, Andy.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good man. That was Andy in Cumbernauld. There we go. Toronto Blizzard. Mm. We need more names like that.
Yeah, we do.
I think
we do.
Maybe that's part of the, comeback, part of the restructure.
Aye. Just get a more kind of dynamic.
What
name
would Dumbarton's be? Do you think? The Barton Dynamo,
yeah. Aye, something like that. Yeah. You know, I mean,
in case you're wondering, we are indeed that short for stuff to talk about at the moment. we're on the phones, 01419511025, and we're on Twitter as well at Clyde SSB. The reason I was just taking my time there, I'm trying to pronounce this name, Gary Walker, because this is a bit before my time, I would imagine. Best goalkeeping performance I ever saw was Evgeny Plotnikov for CSKA Moscow. Rangers needed to win and hope that Marseille failed to beat Bruges away. He was 21, made his debut and played unbelievably. And Gary has even sent me a video clip of a save in the dying minutes. It's a volley, it's gone right in the far corner, and he gets down. What a save that is. I think that might be, is that John Brown who hits a very small screen I've got? I think it's John Brown who hits the shot. And anyway, there we go. Good memories.
What was
there.
His name again, Gordon?
It was Evgeny Plotnikov.
Yeah. Big Evgeny.
Evgeny Plotnikov.
That's one I can't remember. So who sent that one in?
Gary Walker. Oh, that's easier to pronounce.
So that's one that he's pulled out the bag there.
Yep, I like that. The more obscure, the better. Mm-hmm. What are your most memorable or the best goalkeeping performances you've ever seen? Now, during this time, you may have noticed that we're just checking in with different footballers here and there around the country, making sure they're okay, making sure they're safe, finding out what they've been up to. It was Motherwell's turn last week. Tony Watt was blowing Gordon DL's mind about the PlayStation. It was like that conversation in Still Game, you know, when the young guy talks to the old guy. That's exactly what it was like. So it's St Mirren's turn tonight. We've got Lee Hodson on the phone. Lee, how are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
Yes, not too bad. Thanks so much for, I was going to say, taking time out of your busy schedule to join us, but no one's got a busy schedule at the moment. What's life like for you at the moment?
Obviously very quiet. Just sort of staying in and make sure, you know, me and my family are staying well and healthy, and making sure that I keep myself fit for when hopefully the season starts back up, when obviously there's a date set.
Yeah, what about the fitness side of things? I noticed that, you know, a lot of you guys on social media or whatever have been maybe out in the garden or trying to fit a run in here and there. How are you managing to keep up with that? Because there's so much uncertainty, I suppose, about when we start back, and you guys will want to be in relatively decent shape if that day is sprung upon us.
Yeah, we've been sent a fitness program to follow, a regime to follow at home by our fitness coach at St Mirren. So basically once a day I'll go out and do a run that's on the schedule, or some sort of, you know, gym work, lower legs work, just all sort of body weight stuff that we can do at home, and just making sure basically we're ready to perform when we're needed, when the league starts back.
Yeah, what level of communication does this require? Because there's so much uncertainty for everyone. Is there regular contact with Jim Goodwin and with the club, or are you guys sort of left to it at the moment?
Yeah, there's contact between us and the club. You know, there's stuff being put in our group chat every day, just with updates. But as players, all we can do now is make sure we look after ourselves, make sure we stay, you know, well and healthy, and make sure we do our fitness stuff. Because when, as I said before, when the season does get given a date to start back up, we need to go into them last couple of games before the split, you know, in all well and fit and ready and round to go.
You've not taken up any strange hobbies or anything like that to pass the time, have you?
No, not really. It's just the usual stuff, you know, sitting down watching box sets on Netflix and, you know, on Football Manager on the laptop.
All right, who's your team then? I'm interested. You've got me now. Who are you in charge of?
Who am I in charge of? My last one was, who was it? I think it might have been Salford City, maybe in League 2. I sort of starting in the lower leagues and try to work my way up into the leagues and see how I do. So yeah, I've been playing that quite a lot to kill some time.
But see, Jim Duffy's gone for the money there. He might he's not fooling
Salford,
us. He might have gone for the lower leagues, but he's gone for the money.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's gone for the easy,
the
lower
biggest budget
team. Yeah, of course. But listen, you've still got to produce a good.
Yeah,
you know,
I suppose.
I mean, money.
Expectation
it's all about decision
and pressure.
Making.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So from Lee's point of view, but you know, Lee, in terms of, you know, a daily schedule. Obviously, you can plan certain parts of it in terms of going for your run, doing other things. But mentally, how do you keep yourself stimulated? How do you keep yourself kind of up to the speed where, you know, you can keep yourself motivated? Because there's no specific time. You know, there's not as if you say, right, okay, we're going to get back this date, mid April, mid May. So do you just kind of take it day by day?
Yeah, take it day by day. I think every footballer across the country is not really looking at this as a holiday. You know, everyone wants football to start up as soon as it can, but obviously, you know, when it's safe for everyone to, you know, be back out there for the fans and the players and get back out playing football. But yeah, just day by day, really, sort of just making sure we're keeping myself active, keep myself fit. And then obviously just doing stuff around the house that keeps me occupied and kills hours during the day. Got a 6-month-old son, so that keeps me occupied.
Well, that's perfect.
So mentally, I think obviously it's difficult for all the lads because we're always constantly active, going training every day, having this much time on our hands, you know, can be difficult because you don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But the main thing now is just making sure everyone stays well and healthy, because that's the most important thing, obviously, with this virus going around, to make sure people stay safe.
See, I knew that Jim Duffy would be interested in the Football Manager part of it. Mark Guidi, though, I saw his eyes light up when you mentioned box sets, because every Wednesday he comes in here and that's his thing. He's always on the lookout. So what's your recommendation?
Oh, there's a few. I'm just about to finish Homeland.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm on season 7, the last 2 episodes of that. So I've got season 8 still to go. So I'm looking forward to that. I've also just started a programme called Bulletproof on Sky One.
Yeah, the two cops.
With a cop.
You've got a lot of time in your hands as well.
This is a second series, Gordon.
Yeah, I must admit, Homeland, I'm a fan of that. I must admit.
Yeah. It's a bit, Bulletproof's a bit like Bad Boys, the movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? That kind of, you know, buddy cops.
No,
you know,
serious,
I mean,
enough for me.
Yeah. It's like a comedy
sort of.
Yeah, Mark Guidi's far too serious for that.
It's
we stumbled across The Night Manager, the John Le Carré one. It was on BBC 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
Tom Hiddleston and Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie's a baddie. And so that was on Amazon. So watch that 6 parts, The Night Manager.
See, I'm conflicted on that one, because I usually do trust your recommendation, but producer Andy's nodding emphatically through the glass. And well, producer Andy's got, she's got bizarre taste in things. So
and everything.
No. Yeah, and everything. So
no, it's if you like John Le Carré's book, it is very John Le Carré, but it's good. Yeah. It is very good.
Lee, thank you so much for taking time and speaking to us tonight. We wish you well. Hope you and the family stay safe, and hopefully we'll see you back out in the pitch soon.
Good luck, Lee. Take care, Lee.
Good man. That was Lee Hodgson, St Mirren, just giving us a bit of an insight into what life is like for footballers at the moment. We're going to be pestering a lot of them over the next couple of weeks, I would imagine, because there's not a lot happening. But we're having good fun, aren't we? Taking the trips down memory lane, talking about various games and players and managers and incidents from years gone by. Loads of people actually keep getting in touch to say, you know, thanks for keeping the show on. It's keeping me going, and great. Really do appreciate you all getting in touch. Jamesy is on. He's in lockdown in Dubai at the moment. He says the recordings are getting me through it at the moment. So Jamesy, thank you very much for listening. We did kick off the show looking for the best goalkeeping performances you've ever seen, and we've had so many coming in. I thought we would probably knock it in the head at 7 o'clock, but there's loads, so let's keep going. Bernard is in Knightswood. Hi Bernard.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not too bad, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. What have you got for us?
George Hunter and quarter-finals of the Scottish Cup 1951 at Tynecastle. Fantastic. I was just waiting to phone in when that gentleman spoke.
Wow.
First of all, and you know, he was carried off shoulder high, and then he mentioned another goalkeeper was John Bonner in the Coronation Cup final. Fantastic. George Hunter, I was at school. I'd just left school in that year, 1951. I was at St Rocks in the Garden Guard, and Joe Bailey, who was a former pupil, brought the Scottish Cup round in the class, and I was at the game. And I can still remember the Celtic Scottish Cup winning team: Hunter, Fallon and Rollo, Evans, Bowden and Bailey, Weir, Collins, McPhail, Peacock and Tully.
Brilliant.
How's that?
Brilliant. Brilliant. That's fantastic. Brilliant. Well done, Bernard. Superb. Now hold on a minute.
And the same goalkeeper. That's earlier. Was it Frank?
Yeah,
was it
that's what I'm saying. So this goalkeeping performance, I was going to say, in 1951, this was so good that not one but two people have phoned in all this time later to discuss it.
I've got this kind of vision in my head, Bernard. But you imagine the kind of dress code that there was at the games that day, you know, with the bunnets and the shirt and ties. But you can imagine the goalie with the woolly polo neck, shoulder high, you know, getting carried off. I've got this vision in my head.
I've been great. Short trousers.
Aye, great.
Well done, Bernard. I remembered getting the Scottish Cup brought to school as well. So that must have been something special for all the kids at that time.
It was,
superb.
Sadly to say, Joe Bailey ended his life at Kelvin Bridge.
We're trying to remember happier times, as I say to you, and you've brought another goalkeeping performance to us. So that was brilliant.
Bernard,
thanks very much,
superb.
Bernard.
Thanks so much for that. I mean, like we said, that must have been a heck of a performance. And also,
70 years ago,
I like, you know, we're taking it for granted a bit nowadays. You know, we've got everyone's digging into their archive footage, aren't they? Because we're stuck, so it's YouTube, but it's Sky Sports, whatever, and you're looking at old games. No YouTube then, you know, it'd be great to see that.
Memory.
Because that image that you mentioned, Mark, that's the type of thing that football changed. It's changed, you know. You
maybe an old Pathé News or something like that. You know, somebody's got a wee clip here and there of certain games back in those type of days.
I mean, you might get the odd one at the end of a season, but the image of a player being, you know, carried shoulder high—that's done. That's just a thing of the past.
No, it's for somebody, for two people to come on and mention it. You know, I don't know. I take it Bernard and Frank will be into their 80s, no doubt, as I say. If it's 69,
probably,
70 years ago. So it must have been from George Hunter. It must have been very, very special.
There we go. Loads coming in on Twitter as well. David's adding a bit of detail. So this is what happens. Someone will suggest something, then you add a wee bit more and more. Gary Walker, the video he sent me of the CSKA keeper, David remembers it, making his debut at Ibrox. I'm sure he was the third choice keeper for CSKA. Not after that performance, he wasn't. Says David on Twitter. What else have we got? So many, but I'm just trying to flick through. I mean, Terry Hurlock Loyal says Andy Gorham every time he played Celtic.
There was the one market, you know, for Sunderland when they, you know, with the unbelievable saves. Remember when they beat Leeds United, that famous.
Aye, the goalie, Montgomery.
Was it Jim Montgomery?
Bob Stoker was in.
No, was it Manchester United to beat? Sorry, aye, Bob, Manchester United.
Jim Montgomery was it? Yeah, that was back. Was that about
74? Early 70s.
73, 74.
You just remember, you know, obviously.
Different clips.
Certain. They get shown every now and again.
Yeah.
Obviously, if they play each other in the cup, people go back, you know, all these days. And every now and again, that one, Jim Montgomery, you're right. And I think it was, again, he had two or three unbelievable saves. I think they won 1-0, I think.
It was great. The one that you're talking about, clips scoring the wonder. In fact, I know you're good at sourcing all those. One of my heroes was Neville Southall at Everton. I remember the year they won the Cup Winners' Cup in 84, I think it was. But all during that campaign, so you had Andy Gray and Graham Sharp up front, and you'd Trevor Stephen and I think Kevin Sheedy and Peter Reid and Derek Mountford and Pat Van Der Hou, Kevin Ratcliffe. But if you look, I think if there was any coverage of Neville Southall, the contribution that he made round after round, and actually remember at the time, Jim, it would just be midweek, you'd get 20 minutes highlights on a Wednesday night. Yeah. And Southall, and I love because he'd a fantastic warm up routine. Sometimes he'd never run at half time. He just sat out. He wore his socks down at his ankles. He was a whale number. I just, there was something, and I actually got to meet him and get my photo with him. So I was chuffed at that. But Southall was one of the best goalkeepers from what, 30, 40 years ago.
I don't know, Jim, as a manager, even at, you know, at any level, is there any that stand out from maybe, you know, an opposition goalkeeper where you're, I was going to use the phrase tearing your hair out, we'll skip right
Sorry,
over that.
You can use the phrase. It's metaphorical.
At the end of the game and say, why did we have to come up against him in that form today?
Yeah, I think there are times when, you know, as a manager or as a player, I mean, one of the times I can remember way, way back when I played the semi-final Dundee against the United, and Billy Thompson pulled off a couple of unbelievable. He's one against John Brown. I think it was maybe 2-2 at the time. And John Brown hit his free kick, and you thought that's in, and Billy Thompson got across and made an unbelievable save, and eventually Dundee United won 3-2 and got to the final. But you know, yeah, there are moments and there are saves. You know, you're asking me if you start to recollect them. There's a few occasions when you're either played managing or whatever against the new opposition, and you think can't believe that's it. But there are saves within your own goalkeeper. Again, I can remember from both instances. I think it was the last year I was at Morton, and Stephen Dobie were playing Queen of the South down at Palmerston, and Stephen Dobie hit a shot from the halfway. Now, you might think a goalkeeper making a save from the halfway line is not an exception, but he hit one from the halfway line, and Derek Gaston, who was the Morton goalkeeper then, was probably about the 18 yard line where he should be, really, no. And he's backtracking, and you think, well, that's in. It's an unbelievable piece of skill from Dobie. And he just acrobatically just get back with the hand and it'll, again, and then the you know the video later on, you see, because you're thinking they're running away, think it's in. We're thinking, was it in? Because we're in the halfway line, and it's not until later on you see it's an unbelievable save. You know, even though someone might say, "Well, the saves are from 6 yards out, 10 yards out," but this is from the halfway line. But both pieces of skill were incredible. The technique and the ability from Dobie and the save from Derek Gaston.
And I don't know what we've started here now that we put Lee Hodgson in the spot with these box sets that right. People are just tweeting me about box sets. They've ditched the football. Brian Marshall says night manager's great. Thank me later. He's on your line of thinking. And Jonesy says, hey, that Carrie for Homeland, she's one for the watching, says Jonesy. There we go. I think we'll leave that there.
Got it. We've not started yet. The sinner, Bill Pullman.
Yeah, I've seen it.
One, is that good?
No.
So you can get you could see series 2 on Netflix, but we couldn't find series 1. Then we've managed to download it. So
yes, I have seen that. That's not bad.
Good?
Yeah, that's not bad. All right, full time teaser. Back to the football. I promise. Coming up next.
Barry Norman.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Getting you full compensation is their goal. Talk to Thompson's.com.
It's that time of the night when we get together and try and answer your questions on the full time teaser. So if you want to put your time to good use at the moment and come up with a question and get it read out on the show, we would love to do so. Fulltime@Clyde1.com. That's the address you need. Michael Donati has sent tonight's in, so thank you to Michael. And he's looking for, since 2000, 8 players who have played for Celtic and been capped by Scotland, but not whilst at Celtic. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. 8 Celtic players who have been capped for Scotland but not well playing for Celtic.
Yeah.
So they've left Celtic and then they want to get a cap later.
So
on.
Since 2000, 8 players who have played for Celtic and been capped by Scotland, but they weren't capped whilst at Celtic.
Yeah, but could they have pre-Celtic or post-Celtic or both?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. It's just that they've played for Celtic and they've got Scotland caps, but they got those Scotland caps elsewhere.
Right. So Charlie McGrew. Must have got caps playing for.
He'd have been caps playing for Celtic.
Aye, but he also got caps playing elsewhere. That's something.
Oh right,
no, wasn't yeah, Celtic. Only capped elsewhere.
Right,
right, so only never capped.
So not Charlie McGrew. Yeah,
right, okay.
Right, so only capped.
You had me worried there, I must admit.
No, I'm just saying because I'm thinking he was with Aberdeen and he was down in the south, Blackburn and stuff, and I'm thinking we must have got capped, but.
Yes, yeah, so only capped elsewhere, yeah.
Right, okay, I'm with you. Right, give us a
not bad so. Question, that.
That is a good one. I like that.
Because I tell
one,
you what,
actually.
I mean, don't get me wrong, you'll absolutely know all the names, of course you will. But yeah, it takes a bit of thinking.
How far back roughly are we going?
2000?
Yeah, since 2000.
Yeah, so we're probably stretching.
Since 2000.
Yeah, pretty much. I would guess,
20
you know
years.
What? I would guess most of them aren't that close to 2000. I think you can probably give or take a few years at the beginning, but there we go. Anyway, you can play along with us if you want. We're at Clyde SSB on Twitter. We'll get back to the phones very soon because I know lots of you have got other memories that you want to share. Let's hear a bit more though. Like I've said on numerous occasions over the last couple of days or so, we're trying just to get round as, you know, as many clubs as possible and find out what's going on and what's been going on. Let's hear a bit from Clyde manager Danny Lennon, who Jim Duffy you will know very well. He's hoping Clyde's Scottish Cup run can keep the club afloat during the shutdown. The League One side, of course, had that payday against Celtic, didn't they? And the manager says the cash is needed more than ever.
Our club is certainly run, you know, on a good level. I'm sure that the Celtic money in the cup game coming in helped pay, you know, some bills along the way, and what's ever left, I'm certain that will be put to, you know, this situation that we all find ourselves in at this moment in time. But it's like everything, you know, it's not a bottomless pit, you know, and we don't really know the full extent of how long this is going to be. So I think in terms of the short term, I think, and the help that we got from the league also when they distributed the money out earlier, the 1.5, that will certainly be a welcome call for a lot of football clubs.
And Jim, that's where there's a bit of sort of luck, good fortune, call it what you want, involved here. That is what might separate Clyde from Dumbarton or for other similar sized clubs. Just a couple of months ago, they got their payday against Celtic. Stranraer got one against Rangers as well.
Yeah, it does. And also, you know, for a few years before Danny went there, you know, the club had to get rid of a significant amount of debt. You know, so obviously that helps as well. You know, stuff that had been done pre Danny coming in, but you know, having that game is definitely going to help Clyde. There's no doubt about it. But again, as you mentioned there, you know, there's a lot of things that you know have still to be paid, and it won't last them forever. And ideally, of course, they would have loved to have that little bit of cushion, you know, and still had the natural income coming in. So it will certainly offset it and help. And there's no question about that. That's a little benefit they've managed to pick up there, but. You know, that's very, very few and far between. Is from the rest of Scottish football, I think there's maybe only one or two clubs that you know, would have that opportunity to have that bit of money in the bank.
I mean, I'll resist the temptation, Mark, to say, oh, it just shows you how important a big cup draw can be, because it's not like anyone could see this coming. So it's not, you know, not under normal circumstances. But at the same time, it might just make things that little bit easier for Clyde compared to other clubs of that size.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, every penny helps. You can get the big draw, the glamour, the attention that it brings, the money. You know, you look at Clyde, I think the last time when they beat Celtic, it was well documented ahead of last month's game, when it was Graham Roberts and Joe Miller's team against Gordon Strachan's team, and the likes of Craig Bryson get a move off it. You know, there was two or three of them that caught the eye that day and get moves, and the club gets a couple of quid, and the players going to have, you know, better careers financially and playing a bigger stage. So it can work. It can work really well. And just on that, Gordon, as well, we don't want to lose sight, and I hope that because of the economic downturn that we all anticipate is going to come, that our game is short of sponsors as well, Gordon. We hope that because of the funding to keep the smaller clubs going, and indeed our top flight clubs, that we can find a league replacement, Jim, for Ladbrokes, and also for William Hill for the Scottish Cup, because our game badly needs sponsorship.
I think we will, Mark. I know it's a different route, you know, but again, we hate to talk about football, and I think we will, because I think when the game starts, it will have enormous publicity. You know, I think there'll be a resurgence of interest in the game, you know, and I think people will be that desperate to get their football again, get their football fix again, that sponsors who will come in will get a massive amount of publicity. So I think there will be, you know, if there is any kind of you know, light, if you want to call it that, in terms of financial light, you know, from this perspective, I think that that might happen. I think we might have one or two more options than we may have had. We'd rather not have it. Rather, we wait. You know, obviously, of case that they've been, you know, everyone's healthy, safe, and we wouldn't have had this scenario. But I think that you know, further down the line in a few months' time, I think they'll be that desperate for everybody. And once it gets started again, there'll be a huge interest in our sport again. And I think that'll generate sponsorship.
All right, let's speak to Jerry in Irvine. He's been hanging on for quite some time. Jerry, how are you?
I'm all right, Gordon. And I've never ever spoken to you in my life, mate.
Good to speak to you for the first time. What brings you to us tonight?
I need to apologise to every Scottish person in the world.
Right.
Goalkeepers.
What have you done?
I was 12 years of age and I was watching the World Cup in Mexico in 1970. Mm-hmm. And I think I've seen the greatest save ever from Pele. Gordon Banks.
Ah, that's just one that just will live on forever, isn't it?
Yes. Iconic.
That is.
Describe it to us, Mark. You're the goalkeeping guru.
Down on header, bounces up when he gets along to his right hand side, and it's not only actually manages to get to the ball, but it just shows you the strength in his wrists where he's able to scoop it. Up and over. So I know what you're saying, Jerry. That's,
I think Jairzinho goes down the line, doesn't he? Jairzinho goes down the line, stands up, and Pele's coming in, and obviously the goalkeeper is at the front post, you know, and the ball's stuck up to the back post, and Pele has the perfect header, full forehead, straight down in the bottom opposite corner. Gordon Banks is covering the whole ground, gets across, and as I say, managed to get his, not only his handy, but gets over the bar. And yeah, I mean, I think it's widely regarded, even in modern day, as if not the greatest save. Certainly, you know, there's not many that you would question could be better than that. And I think, as I said, from a certain generation. And I think when you watch that, I was a kid at that time, and I can remember watching it. And again, it's just one of those things that, strangely, it's a bit like, you know, in those days when you seen someone doing something with it, everyone tried to emulate. All of a sudden, kids wanted to go and try and be a goalie. Mm-hmm. Somebody was shooting and somebody was trying, they were all trying to kind of copy it and stuff like that. So yeah, Jerry, that was a phenomenal. And Gordon Banks, I mean, to be fair, was an outstanding goalkeeper all round.
Here's the thing, Jerry, though, we're asking for, you know, best goalkeeping performance. Does Andy know anything about the actual performance? Was it just the one save? I'm looking to people who remember the game. Was the rest of the performance good, or was it just that one save?
I think Gordon Banks had it. I mean, it was obviously 1-0 to Brazil on the day, but Gordon Banks was also very famous for Bobby Moore's performance as the England captain, and him, and there's again very famous photographs of Pele and him swapping shots at the end of the game. Pele said he was the greatest defender, and he played, you know, all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, listen, it was Gordon Banks did a few good saves, but that's an iconic save, as Matt said.
And I think the commentary as well helps make it. You know, when you're in the media, you appreciate commentary and stuff. And I think just that clip of the way he's described it. I can't, would it have been Brian Moore? Maybe it was commentating But I think the commentary, when you watch the clip, I've only seen the clips, so when you watch the clip, then it just adds to the whole kind of flavour of the moment.
You got any more on the teaser? You got any at all on the teaser?
David Marshall.
That's what I've got. David Marshall didn't, but I thought, did David Marshall get a kick when he's played for Celtic? No, he's not one. No.
Paul Telfer.
Yes.
Danny Fox.
Nope.
Did he get captain of Celtic, did he? That can't be right, surely.
It's not on Michael's list, just blame him.
I think Danny Fox was only at Celtic a few months, and he did get capped for Scotland, but I don't think he got capped when he was playing for Spit. Danny's probably done his research, he would know better, but okay.
Any more?
No.
Ross Wallace.
Yep.
I'm done. Doing well, Mark. I'm sorry, I can't.
That's all right, that's two down. You're a quarter of the way there. Mm. Here's the thing, while we're talking about goalkeepers, best goalkeeping performances. You know, in modern football, we've seen a real shift now to an emphasis on kicking and distribution. Yes, keepers actually become sort of famous for it. And you look at the way Man City do it, and Liverpool do it, and various others. Do you think if we were to have this conversation in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, and we'd say, what's the best goalkeeping performance? Do you think football will ever actually get to a stage where they go, oh, it was Ederson on blah because his kicking was unbelievable?
Yeah. Yeah, I do think, I think the game has developed to the point where goalkeepers, you know, it has to be, you know, almost as important as the, you know, the shot shot.
Because I mean, we're looking back, and clearly everything that's been mentioned today is all about saves. Because well, I mean, that's what they're there for. But I just wonder if it'll ever become so important that people will
I wonder if next to a goalie could. I don't think we might be too far off a real adventurous coach like the Pep Guardiola of 15 to 20 years from now, who actually does play a goalkeeper as a sweeper. And when he gets the ball, he's encouraged, if he wants, to take a gamble and beat a player. And not, I'm not saying be involved in a direct assist, but involved, actually properly involved in, yeah, the flow of play.
You're not far away from that just now, Mark, are you?
That's, I mean, what I'm saying. But I think the next stage
pinging at 60 yards diagonally into places because the high press now.
Aye.
So the teams are trying to press really high up the pitch to stop them rolling the ball out at the back, and therefore goalkeepers who can hit that 60 yard diagonal are so invaluable. As you say, someone now might just roll the ball out, and somebody comes towards them, skip past them, and that opens up the whole game. So yeah. I think you will find that Gordon, and goalkeepers like used to dominate the penalty box and you know, kind of organise and as well as all those other things, I think will become less and less.
Yeah. For as much as goalkeeping's improved in terms of the ability that goalkeepers have got on their feet, I compare it to, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago, and I'm sure Jim will agree. What really annoys me now, goalkeepers very rarely hold on to it now. Mm. Everything is parried. And you see some things, whether it's in our league or down the road in English Prem, and goalkeepers for me are parrying routine shots. They should just be holding and bringing into their chest. Easy all day long.
I get to say, what you get gloves for? You get gloves to catch the ball. And you know, but the amount of goalkeepers now, so people keep going about De Gea, you know, not for me, no, but a lot of people will say, oh, the best goalkeeper in the world. I don't think so. I think he's miles away. But anyway, he's probably the most expensive goalkeeper in the world in terms of salaries. But he saves Evan with his feet. Evan, I mean, he pulls off wonder saves here and there. But, you know, that's the nature of the way the game's developed.
Changed, yeah.
And it will continue to evolve. There's no question about it. I just like my goals to save them.
Right, as much as I'm enjoying the discussion, I have no problem admitting this is far more important. It's day two of us being asked to stay at home, and I think everyone's feeling the added pressure that brings. Now, imagine if you were already under immense pressure financially before this, worrying about how you were going to look after the kids, how you were going to keep food on the table. Well, that's the reality for so many families. Now, the Cash for Kids appeal is raising money to provide support with just the basic essentials: food, nappies, baby milk, paying for the next electricity bill, things that people take for granted. If you can, we'd love you to help and try and make a donation. 100% of the donations stay right here in Glasgow in the West. And if you want to help, you can make your donation at Clyde1.com/appeal. Thank you from all of us in advance.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. They play to win every time. Talk to Thompson's.com.
We're about to speak to Jim in Aberfoyle, but Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy have got work to do on tonight's full-time teaser. We're looking for 8 players who have played for Celtic and been capped by Scotland since 2000, but they weren't capped at Celtic. They're, you know, only capped elsewhere, if you like. Guys like Paul Telfer at Coventry. You had Ross Wallace, Preston. What else?
Dylan McGeoch.
Brilliant shout. 2 Scotland caps relatively recently. He was a Hibs player at the time.
I'll give you the only two that I can think of, and that is Tony Watt.
Yep, he was a Harps player when he got his Scotland caps.
And Derek Riordan when he was at Hibs.
Yes. I think I heard you say one more during the break.
That was right. Ex-Harps player Stephen Presley.
Stephen Presley.
Yeah. All right, 6 down, 2 to get. We'll get them before the end of the show. Jim is in Aberfoyle. What stands out for you, Jim? Best goalkeeping performance you've seen?
Best goalkeeping performance I've ever seen was Neil Alexander in the UEFA Cup semi-final. How he kept some of these balls out of the back of the net was beyond me.
Fiorentina?
Yeah,
Fiorentina, Jim.
Yeah, I think it was Fiorentina they played, but some of the saves he pulled off that night, or you just thought, how did he get to that? He had no right to get to that.
No, it's going to take a better memory than mine.
I was at that game in Florence.
Did he save? How many penalties did he save? It was 4-2, I think, the score on penalties. Someone will tell us.
I think we're going to become the manager of Italy. Was it Prandelli was the Fiorentina manager? Daniel, is that right, Gordon?
And then, of course, that was at the time when... So was Alan McGregor, he got injured, didn't he?
He got injured the against Celtic in an old firm game, didn't he? And Neil Alexander went in for the last few weeks of the season and played in the final as well, I'm pretty sure.
Does that make it even more impressive, Jim, the fact that, you know, having to sort of come in and stand up and be counted at that time?
Do you think that was the reserve keeper coming in and you just thought he was... I mean, see, McGregor would have been proud of some of the saves that he was pulling off.
Yeah. I remember McGregor as well in that season, Jim. Was it Werder Bremen? He had a couple outstanding saves on that run. I'm sure it was that run to the final,
yeah,
in
that
Manchester.
Was McGregor, wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah, McGregor. But McGregor, you know, as you know, more than played his part on that run as well.
The two keepers were phenomenal, yeah, that season.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's the thing. I do remember that, Jim, and it wasn't exactly seen as a blow that Neil Alexander had to play, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, at that time, obviously, Alan McGregor was a very young goalkeeper. So, you know, I mean, again, it's the same, Neil coming in and performing the way he did. But it's kind of strange, you know, just when we're talking tonight about how many goalkeepers have been thrown in when they're not, if you know, they recognise what we spoke earlier on to David Marshall, getting thrown in when Rab Douglas gets a red card. And then Nigel Spink, as you mentioned, thrown in when it was Jimmy Rimmer, I think, was the number one goalkeeper playing in the Champions League final of a wonder game. And it's kind of strange sometimes, you know, if they don't have a chance to overthink it and they just go in there and it's, you know, how many times they're the heroes. You know, you see maybe sometimes we've seen games where it's a penalty shootout, the goalkeeper comes on, a young goalkeeper, and all of a sudden he's the hero.
Who was the cup final goalie for Hibernian?
Aye, the big
Conrad Logan.
Conrad Logan.
No one said that yet for the question.
What about just for a very, very small part of the game, but such an unbelievable part of the game was when Tim Krul get put in just for the penalty shootout. You know, when Van Gaal subbed and just put him in for the penalty shootout, and I think it was Steenberger with the Barcelona goalkeeper or something.
Stecklenburg.
And he took him off with a minute ago and put him in. That's unbelievable management because it worked, because Krul made a couple of saves and they end up getting through. But that would be a performance in
2014 World Cup.
Always amazes me the speed at which Twitter answers the questions. Mikey's on. He says, "I think Alexander saved one penalty in the shootout and the other was missed, but nevertheless a good performance." Jim in Aberfoyle, thanks a lot for getting in touch tonight. That was Jim giving his to Neil Alexander. Rangers against Fiorentina, UEFA Cup semi-final 2008. Wasn't even the recognised first choice at the time, but clearly left a lasting impression on Jim and Aberfoyle. Still loads of these coming in on Twitter. So many. I'll just try and pick out ones that we've not had.
Give the goalkeepers
before
a moment of glory. Yeah, absolutely. The one that gets all the stick, didn't they?
Well, a friend of the show, Cammy Bell, who's been in the hot seat a few times. Three penalties in one game.
That's
didn't
right.
Yeah, it's against Dunfermline.
Was that last year?
For Dundee United.
Season before last. Yeah.
Dundee United.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's certainly one for him to be proud of. Ross Stradamus is answering all your questions as well. He says the commentator for the Pele bank save was David Coleman.
Oh, was it David Coleman?
Right.
Says Ross Stradamus. On Twitter, what else have we got?
You going to tell us when this pandemic ends?
Very possible. John Ali Celtic says Forster Barcelona. I'm surprised no one said that one yet, actually.
That 2012 game in Tony Watt.
Yeah, because he got the League Cup final. Someone mentioned that, but I mean that's widely regarded as being better, actually, isn't it? That one. I mean,
Barca game.
That's where he gets the Great Wall, the nickname, and Messi speaking about it. I mean, if you're getting a bit of praise from Messi, you're probably doing something right. In fact, there we go. Brendan says, "What about that keeper who saved three penalties last year, Dundee United, Dunfermline?"
Cammy Bell.
It was Cammy Bell. Last time he was in here, he was telling us all about it. So there we go. Right, I think we'll pretty much leave that there. I do want to squeeze in. I'm going to try every night to give credit where credit's due in these difficult times. There's always something good in football being done at the moment to try and make a difference. Sometimes there are loads, and apologies if I'm missing some out because there are so many. But tonight, it is the turn of Peterhead chairman, Roger Morrison. I don't know if you've seen this. He's offering free accommodation at his country inn to NHS staff who are travelling to and from Aberdeen's main hospital, I would imagine. So it's a sort of bed and breakfast type setup, and he's opened it up to those working at the Aberdeen Royal Infirmary during this pandemic. He said he'd be delighted if he could just help under pressure healthcare workers in some way. I mean, I know we've seen it done on massive scales with, was it Abramovich and Neville, but it's all relative and brilliant. Well done to Roger Morrison.
Fantastic. Again, you know, people, you know, are just going out their way to try and help in this situation. And you know, to do that, to open up your facility, I mean, even if it's for half a dozen people, because the shifts they're having to do, there's an unbelievable amount of work that they're having to do, the amount of time they're going to spend, and it might save them, you know, days, you know, and sorry, hours of travelling time, if they can go there and get accommodation and just relax for a few hours before they get back to their shift again, which is fantastic. Well done.
Right, let's round off tonight's teaser then. I can't fail to give a mention though to Martin Griffin, because he's got one of the two that you don't, right. And it's right. Definitely the hardest, I would say. Brilliant shout from Martin. Right. We're looking for 8 players capped by Scotland and played for Celtic since 2000, but not capped whilst at Celtic. So you've got Ross Wallace, Derek Riordan, Dylan McGeoch, Tony Watt, Paul Telfer, Stephen Presley. Two to get.
I'm looking for clues now.
There's one of them play for Hearts.
No. So one picked up their cap whilst at another Scottish club, and one did it in the English, probably Championship, League One, probably Championship. It didn't help, did it?
I'm toiling.
Didn't he?
Right, okay.
Right.
The one who got it whilst at another Scottish club is now playing in the MLS.
Right, so Gary McKay-Steven.
Oh. Was it McKay Stephen? Yeah, Dundee United.
I was thinking him earlier on, but I thought maybe
I was
captain of Celtic.
I never thought.
And the last one, I'm wondering if that clue was just going to be too easy. If I name the team, I think it's too easy.
Who was the manager of the team?
Of Celtic?
No, who was the manager of the team that he played for?
No,
when he got the cap,
Alex McLeish managed them.
Birmingham.
Yep.
I think who was at Birmingham? It was a good bit. Well, it was Gary Connolly. He didn't play for Celtic. So who else? Birmingham. Oh no. No. Now you need to give us another clue.
It's
Robert.
Not
so
it's
last
no,
one. You need to give us a clue.
No, it's not Paul Caddis.
Yes.
Paul Caddis.
Well, well done. We got there in the end. Thank you very much to Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy. Biggest thanks as always though goes to you. Thank you so much for joining in. At the moment, I do keep saying it, I feel a bit like a broken record, but it's worth repeating. We're just going to try and stay here as long as possible. We appreciate these are really difficult times for people. Everybody's feeling it. So if we can come together at 6 o'clock and even make the tiniest bit of difference to your day, talk nonsense about football and try and brighten things up, we're going to keep trying to do it. So keep joining us. 6 o'clock, we are back tomorrow in the company of Gordon DL and Mark Wilson. We look forward to seeing you then. And in the meantime, just stay right there, because Callum Gallagher's up next. He'll look after you for the rest of the night.
Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Compensation you deserve. When there's been foul play, talk to Thompson's.com.